hope that you catch the enthusiasm of the youth and not anything else. We all wonder what the results of these meetings will be, and we trust they will be spiritual blessings that will go on in our lives. I had to think about what a brother at Shirksville said about young people being here these nights, these days. He used to think when he was young that some young people were handsome and some were not so handsome. Now that he's older, he believes that all young people are good looking. And I can connect with that. It definitely feels the difference in our age and in the flower of our life. Establishing courtship practices. This morning, somebody told me this and really applies to them. And it's something for all of us to think about. Some will maybe never court. But it's still good to have some thinking about this. And I invite you to Ecclesiastes 11. I couldn't find any verses that talked about courtship, except in the book of Song of Solomon. I thought I wouldn't go there today for this. This is the byline that they gave me with the title, "When Courtship Begins, a Couple Needs to Decide What the Guidelines of Their Courtship Will Be." And I would say the young man needs to know in his mind what for guidelines he's going to have, and the young lady as well, and you send signals by how you choose. When I was courting, my wife always sat down last, and she always made sure that it was room for a Bible to lay in between us. I appreciated that. You pick up on the signals of the person you are with, and the signals were very clear. So you decide what the guidelines of your courtship will be. How do you go about that? Well, I gave you one little pointer already. How much are parents responsible? They have pretty much said what they're going to say and do what they're going to do. However, I believe that parents have the responsibility if they find out things are going, may I say north? Brother Joe, can I say north instead of south?
Sure.
Okay. When things are going north, you know, really bad downhill, they can pull it apart and say, wait a minute, this courtship needs to wait. You're not trustworthy. The next question, what are some must-have guidelines? Well, you didn't see all of that whenever you looked at your program. So I'd like to read two passages of Scripture that give us just a little for the whole scope of life. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9. Rejoice, O young man, O young person, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. In other words, be happy. Dismiss your negative thoughts. God knows what's going on. But know thou that for all these things, God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow. See? Take that anger and depression. Forgive the people who have wronged you. Let it go. Choose to enjoy life. It becomes a pattern in your mind. Remove sorrow from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh. For childhood and youth are vanity. When I was a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, and there's some change of thinking patterns that has to happen as you transition to adulthood. Let your evil thoughts and memories and bad things and dismal perspective of life, let it go. Chapter 12, verse 1. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. Verse 13 and 14. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. And what you choose in your youth not only affects you in your life, but goes on with you into eternity. So choose right. And this is tremendous verses that inspire us. I'd like you to look also at 1 Timothy chapter 4. A New Testament passage, and I realize this may have been written to somebody who was maybe older than what you are. But in 1 Timothy chapter 4, Paul is addressing a young Christian leader. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Appreciated the devotions about building on the rock. I would like to bring out one point, though, and that is, depart from me, ye that work iniquity. I think we ought to throw our heart into our devotional life and our prayer life. But even if you're not all that enthused about it anyway, do it. But it's the iniquity you need to avoid. Because if we are workers of iniquity and try to mix that into our religion, be thou an example of the believer. You live the Christian life. And do that in your courtship as well. But this morning, we're going to narrow this down away from just general youth practices and come to courtship and try to define and establish what that all means. And I came up front here because I want to use my board. When I'm nervous, I like to use a chalkboard. It just helps me to get my thoughts out on where you can see it. Something that happened to me when I taught school. I can't hardly think without having a chalkboard nearby. At least it seems to help. Establish. Let's define these words. To make firm or stable, to put on a firm basis. It doesn't say shakeified. It says establishing. In other words, make your courtship practices something that's stable. Courtship, I found in the dictionary, is to engage in social activities leading to engagement and marriage. Courtships, when you go through these social activities and they finally get you to engagement and then they get you to marry. Another definition says, the act or process or period of seeking the affection of someone. The act, process, or period of seeking the affection. I want you to like me, so I'm going to court you. I guess that's what courtship is, isn't it? I did reach out to a family member. And when I gave them this question, this was the answer. Courtship. Young people need to have the freedom to chart a course, but they also need to understand the consequences of making wrong choices with that freedom. He went on to say, don't make guidelines simply to impress others. Identify what is sin and choose not to go there. Freedom and responsibility go hand in hand. And so as parents, young people, we are turning you loose. In a measure, keep that parlor door open, keep the lights on, keep, you know, everything above board, but we are trusting you to choose practices that will build your purity and your relationship. Now, practices means to do it, perform something often, customarily, or habitually. And I would like to add a couple more words into this. I would like to add the thought of romantic love. Here's something that often that happens somewhere in courtship. If it doesn't happen, then you better break up, okay? Romantic love is an intensity in idealization. In other words, if it's an idealization, that means it's a fantasy. It's not always reality. But is an intensity in an idealization of a love relationship in which the other is imbued with extraordinary virtue, beauty, etc., so that the relationship overrides all other considerations, including material ones. I better read that again, right? That's way too much for you to copy down. An intensity and idealization of a love relationship in which the other is imbued with extraordinary virtue. In other words, when you come around, they have glasses that see things that aren't even there. You're so wonderful, beautiful, virtuous. So the relationship overrides all other considerations, including material ones. He makes me feel so special. She is so beautiful. And there's some times when I do this sketch about romance turning into reality. Wow, we are alike. We love each other as the romance. And there's a spark there. I love to see people come to marriage, even get married with that spark there. But eventually it turns to reality. They come back from the wedding trip, and after a while, you'll see them look at each other, and there's a different look in their eye. But what are you going to do with that? And that's another subject. We're not on that subject this morning. Now, we're going to talk about some more terms, but I'd like to use my board now. I would like to try to draw out what happens in courtships. And this is not necessarily something in the Bible, but something that I've watched in life, I've seen in life. And the first one here represents two, but it starts with an interest. And so I'm interested in you and you're interested in me, and so we agree that we're going to see if we have a special relationship. And so we go and do something together, whatever it is. But when it comes to talking, we have communication fail. I do not trust you enough to open up. I cannot talk about my heart. I can't even think of any questions when I'm around you. And when you ask me a question, I just mumble. Communication fail, which yields estrangement. Because I have secrets that I don't want to divulge. Or I'm afraid that if you know who I really am, you won't like me. And so the two people sit there and look at each other, and this is a dud. I don't always know what causes that. Shouldn't have started out with such a negative one, should I? You wanted to see one that really went somewhere. Well, where's it going to go? Well, if they go ahead and get married, let's see. Oh, yes, marriage. A life of, unless something changes, loneliness and frustration. I talked about the book that Brother Bauman wrote, Lester Bauman wrote, Sylvester's Journals. That's described in that one. Because he didn't really tell his wife what the rest of his life was. But neither could he just stop it. He was seeing a girl in town. He had a whole separate life. And after they got married, he wasn't going to go back to that anymore, but he did. And he couldn't tell. And it got worse and worse. And he wrote his stuff down, and, you know, well, read the book if you haven't read it. Or this courtship does not end. Let me just write it this way. I wanted to say friends no more. And you can take that either way. You're still friends, but nothing more. Or not even friends anymore. You know, that's the way it happens. Well, that wasn't a nice way to start, was it? But that's the way some go. I've had a couple of people tell me that they're kind of concerned that we don't have enough of these kind of courtships, you know, where it just doesn't work out. And so people are scared to even try it. They just turn them down. There's not enough of... You see, things, I don't know why it changes so much, but I remember driving south of Schaeferstown here with my father, and he said, I dated a girl in that house one time. And I said, oh, I didn't know that. I said, how many people did you date? Well, around a half a dozen or so. I didn't know that. I was glad he only married one, but I had no question about my father's morals or integrity, but that's what he said. Time I came to get married, you know what? It's pretty well you just dated one. And that's all I dated, just one. And it's okay. But there gets to be a feeling that if you break off and start another relationship, there's something wrong with you. And you've got to pretty well hit it right off or else. And I don't know if that's good. I'll just throw that out there. And I tell people who talk to me that way, well, you can change it. You know, you can date, and if it doesn't work, then you can try another one. Yeah, but everybody thinks, no. Don't worry what everybody else thinks. That's what stops a lot of things. And I know you folks get used to us old folks trying to get you to get married. I guess I should plead guilty to that because I think it's wonderful to have weddings. You know, there was years when I had 7 or 8 weddings in a year. even more, 8 and 9. So now it's down to about 1. I don't think I even have any on my books right now. That doesn't mean that you should throw caution to the wind. It's just, it's a wonderful part of God's plan. Well, I wasn't going to, that's not in my notes. I wasn't even going to go there and talk about that. I would like to talk about another kind of a courtship. And this one is, I'm going to say, is ideal, okay? And it's not, doesn't mean it's, it doesn't have any flaws in, but it starts with interest. I'll probably have to write a little smaller. Interest, which ends up in arranging, date, courting, and so there is communication. In other words, we find out we can talk. When we're together, we just talk. We say what's on our minds. We talk about what's on our hearts. And heart, I'm going to say more than just surface, the weather, you know. How much rain did you have last night? That's not talking. Heart to heart. I'd like to unpack this a little more later. Heart to heart talking, sharing, listening. And if you can do that, then trust, acceptance, and understanding what makes the other person do what they do grows, okay? And if you have trust and understanding in the relation, then you do more talking. And if you do more talking, then it produces this. And those build on each other to produce a strong bond. I'm going to run out of room over there, but I'll just circle around or put it somewhere else. There's a strong bond between you, and if out of that strong bond grows romance, that feeling that isn't, I love to see it. The Bible doesn't have stories about romantic relationships that end in marriage. Ruth, is there romance in that? I don't know. It's just, and why? Because the Bible is written for all cultures. And we're in a culture where you can have a love marriage. If you study much into cultures from the East, you find out they're not allowed to have love marriages, okay? But you're allowed to. You're allowed to have it. But if the romance doesn't come because you have that strong bond between you and you start to see the person in a rather glorified way, everybody else looks at that person and says, really? Okay. But anyway, the romance is there. The romance then produces a marriage. Ran out of room. I'll just stop with that. Marriage that is passionate and growing. This is what we want for you in your courtship. Establishing courtship practices. Now, the talking is going to include Bible discussions. We talked about having devotions. We talked about, you can go home and talk about sermons. You can talk about this kind of a talk. You can talk about your deepest, well, we'll get to that later if we don't run out of time. But, you know, it should go from what were you like as a child and what were your dreams and what were you hurt? What are the memories that you had whenever you were hurt? And what are your interests in life? And who are you? You know, you ought to be able to know that person's heart and finally get to the secrets, the sinful temptations, any addictions, anything that you have to know each other, because if there's stuff that is hidden from each other, you don't have a relationship. Okay? And this is the burden on my heart this morning, and this is why I come to this one first. But I'm going to go to another relationship that starts with the same thing, and we'll call that interest, because you wouldn't date somebody you're not interested in. But from interest, it goes like, wow, I just like so much to be loved, that it goes to romance. You don't see the other person for who they are. I just love being special. I love the flowers. I love that he's taken me out to eat. It's so thrilling to know that such a tall, dark, and handsome young man, he's just thrilled with me, and oh, she's so pretty, I just love her, and she makes me feel so special, I can tell she worships me, and every man wants to be worshiped. Really? You want to be admired. If wife doesn't admire you, your girlfriend doesn't admire you, it's going for the rocks. So I love being special, and it goes then to infatuation. Now, you did not hear me define this word yet, but infatuation is a feeling of foolish or obsessively strong love for, admiration for, or interest in someone or something, strong and unreasoning attachment. Now, these people never got to that. They stayed in fail, but they stayed pure. I forgot to say this. They never left it go to a physical level because they were determined they were going to get married with a hands-off relationship. So they never touched each other, but they never got beneath the shell. They never got to know the heart. But they stayed pure. And if you have a pure marriage, you should have a happy marriage, right? If you come to marriage pure. If you come to marriage pure, but you still don't know each other's hearts, you've not really entered into that let's pull in life together, then you're going to have a marriage of loneliness unless that changes. And it can change, but if it doesn't change, it won't be happy. But this person, they go to infatuation. They're so thrilled, but somehow you have to express how much you love them. And the only way to express that is through lustful. That's probably the wrong word, because I didn't touch her because I was lusting her. I just wanted to show her how much I loved her. But do you see how much deception is in that? If you touch somebody to show them how much you love them, whenever really it's that thrill you're getting out of it, that's dishonesty. And so lustful passions get involved. Now, it doesn't start on the rocks. It starts with hand-holding. In fact, I read, and I think it's probably true, there's like 7 steps between holding hands and committing fornication. And everyone seems like the right thing to do when you get there. But you don't start there, okay? You start by holding hands, but after a while, holding hands only does so much. And I just love her so much. I am so infatuated. I'm not thinking about protecting her purity and keeping her holy. I'm thinking about how much I love her and how it makes me feel to be with her. And so holding her hand is not enough. I have to hold it on her lap. Or super hold hand holding, where it gets all tangled in each other. And you know how hands can be. And after a while, that's not enough. And so it seems right that we should hug each other. And there are 7 steps that go with this infatuation and lustful passion until finally the only thing right to do is commit fornication. And when a person does that, it yields impurity, is what I'll write here. The result of this is shame. Do you remember, forget his name right now, David's son, Tamar, Ammon. After he was done, that feeling that wherewith he loved her was how bad he hated her. He was ashamed of himself, and he directed it to her instead of himself. It's shame and disgust. You say, well, I still love her. Well, you like the feeling that you got out of all of it, but the joy is marred. Courtship practices. You're going to have one of these kind of courtships. You'll hear the preacher say you should have a hands-off courtship. But if your hands-off courtship is this one, where you don't really talk about who you are, you don't really bond with each other emotionally, you don't connect spiritually, it doesn't go anywhere, you're going to marry and you're going to be frustrated, and nobody else can help you pick up the pieces. This is something you're going to have to undo yourself. You're going to have to start talking about the real you to get that picked back up. But I'm not talking to marriage people this morning. But this is the kind of courtship we want you to have, where you find out you can talk, you can share. You talk about your families. You talk about what was good about your family. You talk about what wasn't good about, what you want for your relationship. You go back into the past. You go into the future. Let's see, what are some things that I have written down here? What makes you who you are? Can you open up? What are your ideals and dreams for life? What are your hurts? What were your disappointments? And as you hear their hurts and disappointments, is there forgiveness? Do they know the joy of forgiveness and letting things go? What are their fears? What kind of skills do you want to develop? What kind of doubts do you have, and failures and sins and secrets and all those things, so you can be real? And do they have assurance in their Christian life? I guess that bell means I'm supposed to sit down and be quiet. 5 minutes yet. I have a few warnings to give. Sisters, I want to tell you something. You might be beautiful, and he's attracted to your beauty. But if he has a problem with lust, pornography, strange women, you can never compete. I had a young man tell me that one time. He said, Steve, he said, I understand. When I touched my wife before we got married, touched my girlfriend, it just gave me a thrill, and I loved it. But after we got married, one what?
Steve.
What? Well, I'll quit before long. I'd rather hear people say, keep talking, than would you quit? If it's for the forbidden, okay, he said, but now when I touch my wife, I don't get any thrill out of it anymore. If it's the adrenaline that you're addicted to because you go into the forbidden, because you're doing something you know you shouldn't do, after you're married and everything is permissible, then you have to take that addiction somewhere else. And that's what produces so many broken homes and marriages in so many women. It's the same thing for girls. There's more and more people that get into pornography in our day and age on the sister side now. And that's a heartache, because a man can never compete with what is forbidden. And that's why the Bible says that stolen waters are sweet, but the adulterous woman takes a joy out of life. If you do not trust him, if you do not trust her with your heart's secrets, how will you trust each other with your future? I really, really encourage you to be open and talk with each other. And don't turn to this kind of a course, because you'll never really trust each other. If you turn to that kind of a course in your courtship, you will never be able to trust your man unless you make it right. I should talk about that. If you have gone there, I'll never forget standing on my back deck before the days when we had caller ID. I got a call from a lady. She says, Steve, you don't know who I am, but I've heard you preach already. I'm not in any of your churches. But she said, I got a real problem. And I said, what's that? She said, before we got married, my husband and I committed fornication. And now he won't go to the church with it. God has the power to forgive sins. But there are some sins that are worse than other sins. I know that lust and fornication or adultery are the same thing, and yet they aren't. There, if you see a brother sin a sin which is not unto death, you see him, take a glance, talk to him, pray for him. But if you have crossed the line of those sins, murder, drunkenness, fornication, covetous, acts of covetousness, the only thing to do is go and tell the church. And I have seen people get deliverance and freedom. If that is in your past, brother, sister, whoever you are listening to me this morning, if you have things back there that are spoiling your marriage relationship, spoiling your relationship with God, go tell your church leader. Tell it before the church. Let the church forgive you. Some men send their sins beforehand unto judgment, and some men they follow after. What kind of memories do you want to have of your courtship? What kind of memories? You make them while you're courting, and then you live with them the rest of your life. I like the idea of writing a mission statement. I don't know of anybody that's done that. But early in your courtship, sit down together and say, what do we want to remember about our courtship? How much time we spent talking to each other, going to church services, being with our parents, being with family, doing things for old people, blessing the other old people in our life, Double dating, what do we want to have a priority? Let's put it down on paper and see if we can live that out. I don't know if that's realistic or not. I'd like somebody to tell me if you have had a mission statement or not. I would enjoy knowing that. Except the Lord build the house. That's the other factor that's involved. God can build a relationship with you because He made you. If you have a relationship with Him, He will lead you, and you can look back on your courtship and into your marriage. And it gets better every year. Gets better every year where you would never, never want to go back or give it up for anything until the Lord separates you. God bless you.